Welcome back to the Come On Now MMA podcast. I'm Trent Rinesmith, and it's been quite a while. Here's what I've been up to. Been busy, been real busy, and something has to fall by the wayside when I'm busy like I was, and that was the YouTube channel and the podcast here, because the honest truth is the things that kept me busy were the things that make me money, and the YouTube and the podcast, while they are just more of a hobby at this point, I would like to do the podcast and the YouTube channel more than I am, but that's not going to be possible until I can replace the income I'm making with the freelancing. Other than Bloody Elbow, that's going to stay. The Bloody Elbow thing is going to stay as long as they'll have me. But the other freelancing stuff I do is stuff I'd rather be doing this. So the way you can help me in that is to subscribe and watch the videos and share them and all that jazz. I'm not one to, you know, beg for clicks, beg for likes and that kind of thing, but that's the reality of the situation here. If you want more of this content, the support has got to be there, and, you know, I'm not going to candy coat it, not going to sugarcoat it. That's just the way it is. So I would like to do this more. I would love to do this more, but time constraints limit it. And so for now, the plan is going to be hopefully once a week at least, and then we'll go from there. But the more support, the more income I can replace freelancing with the YouTube, and you'll get more YouTube. So that's that. Black and white and no BS. So on to the podcast. So what this is going to be is basically I'm going to look at some highlights of the week news wise and then comment on them, and that's kind of going to be the format here for at least a little while. So the first thing I want to look at is Talia Santos. And not to pick on Talia Santos, because this is an MMA thing that it's throughout MMA. And she's just someone who, you know, she was the one that brought it up this week. And so she's going to be the one that I focus on here. So she said her loss to Valentina Shevchenko, "I was surprised by how easy it was. I was expecting the fight to be much harder in some areas. That's what I wanted to show, though, that she's not this monster, this unbeatable girl that the other girls were thinking. I respected her. She's had the belt for years now, so I prepared really well. I was ready to solve the puzzle." See, the thing here is you lost and you didn't solve the puzzle. Maybe you got close, but the end result is an L. And so it wasn't easy. It wasn't solved. And this is something that we see a lot of in MMA. When someone loses, instead of praising the person that beat them, they negate what that person did. And they said, well, you know, I'm better than them and they got lucky. That's not the point. That's not what happened. What happened was you lost. And I understand not liking to lose. I understand that. But I don't think anyone really buys this. And I don't think a fighter or anyone really can move on from a loss or learn from a loss when they are in basically a denial here. Accept the loss, accept the defeat, and learn from it and get better from it. Don't deny it. To deny it, it doesn't help anyone, and it really doesn't help the fighter to move on. You got to get past it. Put that in the past. Okay, I lost. Here's why I lost. Here's what I can do better. Here's the gaps I saw, and here's how I'm going to win next time. Far too often we see this where a fighter gets dominated, and that's not what happened here, but an example, a fighter gets dominated on the ground or in striking, and they automatically say, I was better on the ground than them. I was better striking than them, but you weren't. So I would like to see a lot less of this. I understand that, again, it's you don't want to give someone that beat you on a one-on-one sport credit, but be the bigger person. Say I lost, here's why I lost, and here's how I'm going to win. Don't demean the other person's victory. It's not a good look either. It's not a good look at all. Talk a little bit about Ali Abdelaziz, who I don't like to talk about all that much because we, God knows, Ali Abdelaziz will talk about himself at any opportunity he gets. And that's kind of what I want to talk about here. No MMA manager, and I don't think any sports manager or sports agent lives vicariously through their athletes as much as Ali Abdelaziz. He will tell you repeatedly how great his athletes are and how they will beat anybody, and it doesn't matter the weight class. Now we have him talking about how Khabib would be able to beat Kamaru Usman, and it just doesn't make any sense. And I know he's angling to get himself in the media and he gets clicks and all that, but the reality is you don't need to write a story every time Ali Abdelaziz opens his mouth, because Ali Abdelaziz's main focus is Ali Abdelaziz and promoting Ali Abdelaziz. He promotes himself before he promotes his fighters. And he knows that anytime a mic is in his face, he's going to get clicks. So he just spews random things out, and the MMA world sucks it up. And I know someone's going to say, well, you're doing the same thing. But I'm trying. I would like it to stop. If I had my wish, the MMA media would not talk to Ali Abdelaziz at all, unless he had something, you know, reasonable to say. And saying that his retired fighters, who's clearly going to stay retired, could beat a current MMA champion is not newsworthy. So a lot less Ali Abdelaziz would be beneficial to all of us. UFC and Pride Month. The UFC loves to sell merch during Pride Month, and this year was another example of that, where they rolled out their Pride merch. And they gave fighters the opportunity to wear Pride fight kits. Jeff Molina took advantage of that. He wore one, and he got a ton of grief for it from quote-unquote fans. And if the UFC really wanted to be an ally in this case, they would have stood up to those fans. They would have made a statement. At the very least, they would have said it was unacceptable what was said to Molina. He got a lot of pushback, and it was not good. It was not pretty. It was bigoted. And the UFC should have stood up and said, look, that's not acceptable. That's not what we're doing here during Pride Month. That's not why we encouraged our fighters to wear Pride fight kits. Instead, the UFC was silent, kind of left Molina out there on his own to comment on it. And that was a terrible look from the UFC. And I know why the UFC did it. And it's because they are going through the motions like many corporations go through the motions during Pride Month. They support it very little. They support it because they feel like it's something they're supposed to do. And if you feel like it's something you're supposed to do, well, then don't do it. But the UFC does it, I guess, because they can sell merch. I don't know. But what they should have done here is they should have stood up for Molina and said, look, you people that are giving him a hard time and giving him grief about this, there's no room in the UFC for fans like that. We don't need you. Go away. Instead, the UFC did nothing. And I understand why, because the UFC does not stand up to bigotry. In fact, it more or less accepts it. And by accepting it, it encourages it. And I know someone will say, well, it's free speech. And that is a cop-out, because free speech doesn't mean no repercussions. And if the UFC wants to be an ally here and do a little more than just sell merch during Pride Month, it should have stood up and defended Jeff Molina's choices. And it should have stood up to its own fans and said, nah, we're not really interested in having you as fans. It didn't do that. I'm not shocked by that. But next time when the UFC starts selling their Pride merch, maybe think about how it was quiet when someone wore a Pride fight kit into the octagon and got a bunch of grief for it. Dana White's hypocrisy and his media, I guess, meddling. We're going to talk a little here about Dana White and Nate Diaz. So what White had to say about Nate Diaz was Diaz is looking to get out of his deal with the UFC and go on and move on and probably fight Jake Paul. And that's fine. That's great. He can make money doing that. And I understand why he would want to do that, because he's probably going to make more in that one fight with Jake Paul than he's made in his whole UFC career or very close to it. But it's enough that he wants to get out of his UFC contract and go do this. Obviously, the UFC is not going to let that happen, because the UFC doesn't let fighters out of their contract if they can make a buck off them. And they can make a buck off Nate Diaz. And so he's tied to the UFC, tied to that contract, and unable to fight Jake Paul or unable to do anything, really, except sit and wait for a UFC fight. And here's what White had to say. I mean, I like Nate. Let's be honest. Nate's won one fight in the last 5 or 6 years. When these guys get into these positions, you got guys that have been with us for a long time that we respect, that we care about. You know, you got Cerrone's and Anthony Pettis before he left, and you got Nate Diaz, and Nick Diaz is still under contract with us. So you want to be fair to everybody. You want to do the right thing or whatever. Nate Diaz isn't going to come in and fight Kamaru Usman. So listen, we're trying to do the best we can. We're trying not to shit on anybody and disrespect anybody. But it's not like we're talking about Kamaru Usman here. We're talking about Nate Diaz. Nate's won one fight in 5 years. So trying to figure out this thing out with him, he probably should go on and fight Jake Paul. That's the fight that makes sense. So a lot going on here. First of all, we're trying not to shit on anybody. And then he immediately shits on Nate Diaz and saying he's won one fight in his last 5 or 6. If that's not shitting on somebody, I don't know what is. It's subtle for Dana White, but he's shitting on Nate Diaz. He's pushing Nate Diaz down. He's trying to decrease the value of Nate Diaz. That's all that is. And saying that he should go on and fight Jake Paul, great. Release him then. If that's the fight that makes sense, let him take it. If you're just holding him up to hold him up, and that's what it sounds like is happening here, then let the guy go. There's no use in keeping him around if you don't see a value in him. And obviously, he's a guy that's won one fight in his past 5 or 6. So there's no value in him, according to Dana White here. So let him move on. Of course, that's not going to happen, because the UFC doesn't want its fighters to move on and make more money outside the UFC. It does not want that to happen. And so Nate Diaz is stuck in a contract, and until he gets a fight that he wants, he's kind of left to hang here. Because unless I'm wrong, the UFC contracts don't say they have to offer you a fight you want or a fight that you will accept every X amount of months. They just say they have to offer you a fight. So if the UFC offers Diaz a fight he doesn't want or can't accept for whatever reason, well, that's fine. We offered you that fight per our contract, and since you turned it down for any reason, your contract extends. And that's where Dana White is with this with Nate Diaz. I'm sure they've offered him fights because they have to contractually, but what they don't have to offer him is a fight he wants. So you offer him a fight that he doesn't want for whatever reason, and when he turns it down, the contract extends, and he's stuck in this perpetual cycle of not being able to get out of his UFC contract. So, in short, if the fight is the Jake Paul is the fight to make, make it. Shit, even if you have to make it and take your 50% cut, like you reportedly did with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, do that. But let the guy earn some money here. Tying him up doesn't help anyone. Tying him up and stepping on him doesn't help anyone. But we know the UFC's interest is not Nate Diaz. It's not any particular fighter. The UFC's interest is, and this is the design from the get-go, the UFC. The important thing in the UFC is the brand. And speaking of, Jim Miller is scheduled to fight at UFC 276. He was going to fight Bobby Green. He's fighting Donald Cerrone instead. And he's fighting Donald Cerrone at welterweight instead of lightweight. So he didn't have to take that fight. But we know Jim Miller takes any fight. He's only ever stepped out of one fight. And that's because he got COVID. And Jim Miller will fight. You give him a fight, he's going to take it. What he doesn't have going into UFC 276 is a contract. This is his last fight with the UFC. And this is the man who has the most fights in the UFC. He's up there in fight night bonuses. He's up there in finishes. He's up there in victories. But he doesn't have a UFC contract. Jim Miller is the fighter the UFC should use to say, this is the guy you want to emulate if you want to have a long career. You accept fights. You always go for the finish. Miller goes for the finish, sometimes to his detriment, but he's never in a fight to win by points. He wants to win. He wants to get the finish. If he gets knocked out doing so, I think in Jim Miller's mind, that's just the cost of doing business and fighting the way he fights. So Jim Miller is and has been the ideal fighter for the UFC for a long time. But instead of rewarding that and pointing out and saying, you know, this is the guy you should fight like, and if you do, you'll have a long career with the UFC and we'll take care of you. Well, now you see what happens. Jim Miller is probably, in the eyes of the UFC, making too much money, and so he's going to fight out his deal. And don't forget, Jim Miller is on a two-fight winning streak now, and he has two, I think, stoppage wins in those fights. So it's not like he's in a prolonged slump. He's winning. And the UFC is not going to give him a new deal until after the fight. And or they're going to release him. And that's just dumb because Jim Miller, like I said, is the ideal the UFC wants. That should be rewarded. And if you lose a little money on Jim Miller, which I don't think you are since you're... your revenue was over $1 billion for the past calendar year. I'm sorry, past fiscal year, past rolling year. But you got over $1 billion in revenue. And from what John Nash extrapolated from that report was that 17.5% of the revenue is going to the fighters. You're not going to lose money by giving Jim Miller another contract based on what he's currently making. What I think will happen here is Miller will win or lose. I think the UFC will offer him a new deal. I think the new deal will be under what he's making now. And the UFC is just going to say, well, you're not the fighter you were 5 years ago. And so because of that, you're not worth what you were to us 5 years ago. It's stupid. It's short-sighted. It goes against everything the UFC says they stand for. But again, I am not surprised. Greg Hardy was released from the UFC and he signed with Bare Knuckle FC. And recently there was a report that Hardy was told that if he gets some wins outside the UFC and, you know, builds up his wrestling, they'll welcome him back. I'm not so sure that that's really, I mean, that might be what got said. But this is kind of a thing you say maybe to someone you just don't want to have an uncomfortable conversation with. You just yes them to death and tell them what they want to hear. And then when the time comes that they've fulfilled what they thought needed to be fulfilled to get back in your good graces, you just kind of blow them off. I think, I would hope that's what's happening here, because Greg Hardy was not a good fighter for the UFC. He didn't really do anything for the UFC other than cause bad press. And I mean, he got knocked out and people like to see that, but that's no reason to keep him around the UFC. So I think and I hope that Greg Hardy's UFC run is over. And further, how do you get wrestling reps in by bare knuckle boxing? I don't know. So I kind of think that this was just something the UFC said to appease him and make him think that, you know, yeah, there's some hope out there. But hopefully that's the case. And Hardy is not going to come back to the UFC. I don't think he should. I don't think he should have been signed in the first place, and I've made that clear. Someone who has a violent past, violence against women. And remember, he was found guilty by a judge before he was, before the person that he reportedly assaulted did not report to the jury trial. And the charges were dropped and everything was expunged. But that doesn't remove the fact that in the first trial, the judge found him guilty. So hopefully Greg Hardy is done with the UFC and we can just kind of put that behind us and remember that it happened because it was an ugly portion of the UFC history. But maybe it's a lesson the UFC will learn from. But there's no reason to have Greg Hardy back in the UFC. So that is going to be a wrap here on the first foray back into the podcast and YouTube for a while. Again, this is kind of what you're going to get for the next little bit. I'm hopefully going to be able to do more. But again, that all depends on how this all plays out on the financial end. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And why sugarcoat it or why lie? But anyway, so hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully there'll be more, and hopefully over time it'll just keep rolling and getting bigger. So thanks for watching, and I'll be back.